Hello and welcome to Speaking with Carl Thornton Jr., the man who, again, as always, is honored to be your host, and definitely appreciating Mr. Gregory Stafford for providing our theme song, No One Else. We're going to be moving into spiritual perspectives first hour, as we normally do, and we're going to start a little differently, though. We're going to be talking some more today about justice and true love, and looking at the connection. Is there a connection between love and justice? Well, I'd like for us to explore that a little bit more this day. I guess it's been a couple of weeks since we've been on that. Just before we move into it, though, I have something else I'd like for us to check out. It has to do with giving. How many of you really, really, really enjoy giving? Now, next question related to that. Why do you enjoy giving? Well, the Bonner Group does a lot of research is dealing specifically with giving and generosity. Well, specifically with what's going on in the Christian world, really, and what's happening with the churches, of course. And along with that, they're taking a look at generosity. Yeah, where we are with regards to generosity. I'd like for you to hear some of the work that they've done on that very topic. Here we go.
Welcome to the fourth segment of the Generosity Gap, where we look at the strength gap. Brooke?
This section of our look at the generosity study explores how does one build up strong habits of giving? How do we strengthen those muscles of generosity? What are some patterns of giving and volunteering, especially when we look at churches? And how can good habits be established? First, we wondered if Christians believe that giving and volunteering were interchangeable. In other words, if they were volunteering of their time, was it necessary for them to be giving financially as well? Pastors disagree with this premise. Almost no pastors would say that giving and volunteering are interchangeable. Two-thirds would strongly disagree with this premise. But about half of all Christians would say that actually it's okay for someone who is volunteering to not give financially, that they are interchangeable. This revealed a bit of a gap, big gap perhaps, between pastors and Christians on what their expectations were around giving. So we wondered if that behavior played out by looking at when was the last time someone volunteered, by how much they gave in the last year. In this chart, you can see, for example, that those who gave $2,500 or more in the past year were actually the most likely to have volunteered in the past week or past month. Fully half of those most generous Christians had actually volunteered in the past week, and more than two-thirds had volunteered in the past month or more often. So those who are more generous with their money are also more generous with their time. This follows the path all the way down the different levels of giving, with the exception being in the group that gives the least. Those who give less than $50 a year were slightly more likely to have volunteered in the past month, indicating that they do see interchangeability between their time and their giving financially, perhaps because they're cash strapped or financially strained. So what do pastors think of this? We asked pastors if they felt that all Christians should give to their church. And in fact, 9 out of 10 would strongly agree with this premise. But again, there's a gap, and that only about half of Christians strongly or somewhat agree that all Christians should give to their church. So many of them might be considering giving to nonprofits as an important act of generosity, but not feeling compelled to give to their church. That suggests a gap not only in expectations, but potentially a gap in budget for a lot of churches. It's maybe an area that churches need to address in their teaching and discipleship. But how do they strengthen Christians' giving muscles? Where does generous thinking and living come from? Well, our team looked at a lot of different factors and analyzed which ones had the most impact on whether or not someone became generous. You can see from this chart, the strongest correlation we saw with different factors of generosity were one's parents. If they were raised in a generous household, they were more likely to value generosity today. So looking at the columns, those who say that generosity is extremely important to them were significantly more likely to have extremely generous parents. And those who say generosity is not important to them were much more likely to have parents who were somewhat or not at all generous. So these values are getting passed on. Additionally, we ask people, did you have a conversation about generosity in the past week? And those who say that generosity is the most important to them, that it's extremely important, two-thirds of them were likely to have talked to their spouse or their children about generosity in the past week. They're actively modeling and practicing these values at home and trying to pass them on to the next generation. So this suggests that the family may be one of the greatest places to foster generosity.
Okay, so when you look at the data and you see this huge gap between pastors' perceptions and what's happening for other Christians, and so there's at least two different ways, and of course the report goes through a lot of different things, the gaps between pastors' perceptions and what's happening for people in the pews, kind of their mindset and their heart set. But a couple things. One is that pastors view generosity to be very explicitly expressed through financial generosity, through money, and that people in the pews sort of think of it as interchangeable. Of course, what's interesting, I think, from a biblical point of view, and we've said this throughout our segments, that there is a clear indication in Scripture that our money speaks louder than our actions in a lot of cases, and that generosity should include something of our financial giving. But again, that sets up a second gap, which is that when we ask pastors about whether they would give, whether people should give to the church, they were clear about that. But Christians are much less clear. So this is one of the big gaps that we have been trying to address and want to address in the generosity gap, is helping pastors to see and understand what people in the pews are experiencing. And it's not so that you can just come to their point of view. It's so that you can communicate more clearly in this very complicated age.
Yeah, we're not emphasizing in the strength gap that you should come to agree with your congregants. That's not what we're necessarily suggesting. But we absolutely want you to understand that there's a huge gap between the perception of most pastors and the perception of most other Christians. And remember, who did we interview for this and who did we survey for this work? And so Brooke unpacked this a little bit at the front end. But let's go through that again because it's important context. So we're talking about Christians. So these are people who are self-identifying that faith is important to them, right? Mm-hmm. And they're saying that they're practicing in some way. But let's talk about church attendance. That could range from as little as going once a year to as frequently as weekly or more. And so there's a spectrum of who's responding in the survey, and that probably influences some of how they feel, right?
Sure, absolutely. And when we break it down by segments, when you look at more active churchgoers, they're going to have perspectives that line up with pastors a little bit more.
They're going to be closer, but they're not.
Exactly. They're not. So part of the thing we're really asking you to close this strength gap is to think about how it is that you make the case for the kinds of generosity where it's not, like if you only give money or more money, making a case for a wider spectrum of generosity, and how do we communicate about generous acts within our community. And this really leads us to one of the final sort of solutions that we wanted to offer, which is the church as a learning community when it comes to generosity, that we can exercise our generous muscles more often, sort of generosity strength training.
Right, yeah, and so that was the word that really was occurring for me and for David in preparing for this section, is this idea of learning. And so Brooke was starting to unpack that too, this idea of when parents model. And so if I'm an adult, right, and I look back in time and I see or recall that my parents were either extremely generous or like really, really generous, that has a pretty profound impact on how I show up today, right? So learning through modeling, not necessarily just talking, right? Learning through modeling appears to be the most important contributor to whether or not I'm a generous person when I'm an adult. Now, a deeper insight, and this is where I think Barna's research here is additive to some of the collective knowledge on generosity that's been unfolding over the last 20, 30 years, is if I'm an adult who's talking about generosity, in order for my parents' modeling to make a difference, they had to be really, really, really generous or really generous. Like, somewhat generous parents doesn't seem to have that much of an impact. And so this word learning, David, I think what's really important is how do we learn? Yeah, we can learn a bit through hearing, but it seems like we learn a lot more through modeling. Maybe we can unpack that a little bit for some of the pastors and lay leaders.
So I think about my own grandmother who was a regular churchgoer in the Southern California area, and I remember the cookies that she would make. She wasn't always physically well, so she would always be baking in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And giving those cookies to various church events, and she would be on the phone doing a lot of calls to people in hospitals and people that were homebound. And so I think about my grandmother Irene and her generosity, and I can think about other aspects of generosity that was expressed in my family, my parents. My dad was a lifelong pastor, and even some of the major commitments that he would make financially and otherwise to the church. And so those demonstrations of generosity, you know, I think have been modeled for me.
Well, and that's a beautiful thing too, because here's this grandmother, she would have been among the elders, right? And and she's showing up in a way, she would be one of those 1 in 7 elders who would have expressed generosity through an act of service, emotional support, hospitality.
Yeah. Right.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So I think one of the things we really want to emphasize as we close out this web series is this notion of a learning community and this notion of the strength gap. How can we close this strength gap? You know, one of the interesting projects that I've had a chance to have a front row seat on is this book you've been writing called The Habit of Asking.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we want to emphasize that the church is the original learning community. It can help to model at its best. It models appropriate, generous behavior. How in the weddings and funerals and child dedications and, you know, children's ministry and youth ministry and various aspects of its work, how does generosity not just equate to the offering plate, but how do we model and talk about generous behavior and acknowledge that, you know, people that are serving vocations out in the world, that they are being generous in certain ways. But I love the idea of the habit of asking, because it is its own expression of a learning community doing its work.
Yeah.
A pastor trying to learn how to have the habit of asking. Talk a little bit more about what that looks like.
Yeah, and David, you're unpacking it really well, because we can look out into the broader church, into our leadership in the church, and we can see an area of strength where there's already a really rich habit, beautiful habit. And then we can also, in fact, we know some of this through research that we did with you at Barna last year on church startups and money. We saw that for a lot of early tenured pastors and church planters, they weren't reporting that they had received any kind of training on asking for financial gifts or offerings or tithes. Some had, but most hadn't. Conversely, so let's talk about the strength first, and then we'll talk about the opportunity, the learning opportunity. So here's the learning strength, right? If we go into a church for a wedding, we're usually going to hear about the ritual and the context in many layers of meaning. So definitely for this couple who are going to be married, we're going to understand, like, hey, what's going on with this couple? There'll usually be some kind of reference to this church, this couple in relation to this church. And then there'll also be an additional layer of meaning, this couple, this church, and the church as a body. And so different churches will have different ways to describe that, but there's a learned strength across the whole of the church and our churches to help us understand what's happening here, to help make meaning. Conversely, for a lot of our congregants, they don't get that sense of the making of meaning, the understanding in the context of the request for a financial gift, okay? So is the church talking about this gift for you and from you? This gift for you and from you for this church, and then into the work of the broader church. And so we have this strength. We see that strength show up in marriages, in child dedications and baptisms. We see it show up in funerals. There's so many life events and contexts. We can have that strength show up for even requests for financial generosity too.
Yeah.
And so that's the heart of the habit of asking, is how do we help pastors and church planters and also folks who might be on a church planting team. They're going to be finding themselves requesting financial gifts of some kind pretty often. And yet they also feel the sense, and we know from the research, that a lot of them don't know how to do it. So can we equip them? Can we give them basic skills on how to do it? And can we also help them understand that, just like in the context of a marriage or a child dedication or anything else where we're talking about ritual context theology, that there are always, or at least often, discipleship implications too. And there are discipleship implications even in the act of requesting tithes, gifts, offerings.
Good stuff. So a lot of the theme for this Generosity Gap web series is this notion of trying to help close those gaps. And And we believe, based on the research and some of the conversations we've been having really now, almost close to a decade, that these gaps are enlarging, that the gaps today are bigger than they were 10 years ago and 20 years ago and 30 years ago. Barna Group has been tracking a lot of these things for almost 30 years. And so we want you to realize the urgency of these trends and how it is important for you to become the learning community, to demonstrate vulnerability and openness and adaptability in order to close these gaps. And my vision for this project, and I'll ask you to do this just in a sec, but I can imagine you as a church community becoming healthier in all of these different expressions of generosity and the way we express our heart, our mind, our soul, our strength towards generous behavior in the world. What Christ has done for us allows us to be generous, truly generous people, because God owns everything. He knows us intimately, and He allows us to be on mission for Him in the world. And so I could see, you know, like there's urgent questions that could be addressed that could help you, you know, literally raise more money in the next 12 months. But even more than that, you can become the kind of formational community that over the next decade and 20 years and 30 years, you could be forming parents who form their children, who become the kind of generous contributors that are so countercultural to what are the directions of our society today, that they can't help but speak for the reality of Jesus in their life, and their life and their generosity actually, you know, is in fact its own testament. So that's my hope for this project, is that it would provide you the tools, the insights, the opportunity for conversation within your church, within your staff, within your community, to become the kind of church that Christ intends for you. What are some of your hopes about this project?
Well, first, I love all those hopes, and I have all those hopes, so I'll bring an and. And it goes back to what we were seeing and what Brooke was sharing about parental modeling. You know, where did these adults see this when they were kids? And my hypothesis and my assumption, and I suspect it's yours and Brooke's too, is a lot of times they saw it in a church. And so sometimes they were seeing a very generous parent making a financial gift. And sometimes they might have seen a very generous parent volunteering for a vacation Bible study. And they might have seen a very generous grandmother cooking cookies, right? And so, you know, where did this modeling happen? For so many of us, it happened in churches and around churches. Mm-hmm. And so if modeling is so important, and it sure looks like it is from Barna's research and our research at Thrivent and the research of others, and if churches can be an incredible learning lab and modeling lab for living generously, and they are, and we know that's true. So all of David's hopes and wishes are mine, and a deeper wish and hope too that builds on that is church is an incredible learning and modeling lab. It has been, it is today, and it can be tomorrow.
And we all have a lot to learn, don't we? And so that's part of the spirit of this project, is one in which we can all come to research and try to learn what God might be asking us to do and to change.
Absolutely.
About ourselves. And so we invite you to dig deep into the monograph, into the questions, and sort of the spirit of the whole project, of what it might take for us to become a church that looks at the heart, the mind, the soul, and the strength of generosity. Thank you for joining us on this Generosity Gap journey, and we look forward to seeing the kind of fruit that it would produce in your church.
So what do you think about that, ladies and gentlemen? Generosity. How has that played out for you? You know, one of the things that they pointed out several times is that in their studies, according to their studies, the people who really, really gave, who were really, really generous, the majority of them, had examples within their own families. They had seen their parents give generously. How many of you are generous givers and you had generous parents? How many of you are generous givers even though you did not have generous parents? Whether because they truly did not have much to give, or maybe they had much to give, but giving just wasn't important to them. It just wasn't really on their radar. Giving, is it important? What did you think about the question? Giving versus volunteering. Giving money versus giving your time and energy. Volunteering for services that need to be provided by the church versus giving money that the church needs to run its business. And I'm saying run its business to do what the church does. Pay the power bill, pay the water bill, maybe a few staff salaries. Volunteering versus giving financially. Equally important. One more important than the other. If one is more important than the other, to you, which is more important? And it's interesting that they mentioned that we can indeed strengthen our giving habits. And I guess a lot of it really starts with attitude. One of the things that I would really like for all of us to keep in mind is the importance of making sure that the primary reason that we're giving is that we want to help someone. Whether we're giving to the church to do what we can to help the ministry, which in turn helps all whom it helps. Making sure that the primary motive for giving is to help someone else and not to get. It is not a sin to receive in return for what we have given. Bible talks so much about sowing and reaping. It is not a sin. It is not a bad thing to even desire to receive back based on what we have given. Mm-mm. You notice I said make the primary motive. I didn't say make the only motive. I said make the primary motive for giving being to help. That should be foremost in our hearts and on our minds. Foremost. But there are times when we make an agreement with God and we say, well, God, if you'll do this for me, I'll do that for you. He expects us to keep our word. There are times when God may say to us, you do this for me and I'll do that for you. And God fully intends to keep his word. And sometimes the promise he makes has to do with finances, providing them. Let's make sure that we are not becoming materialistic, where our primary focus is on money and other material things. Make sure that our affections truly are on things in heaven. And ladies and gentlemen, don't believe these people who try to manipulate you and play on your intelligence by telling you money is in heaven. And that's where it's waiting for you. There is a reason that people dig into the ground for diamonds. The diamonds are in the ground. There are reasons that people dig into the ground. The rubies are in the ground. They dig into the ground because the sapphires are in the ground. The gold is in the ground. The iron is in the ground. The dollar bills, the trees have to be cut down and eventually transformed into dollar bills. That's where the money is, right here on this earth where you and I are. So believe me when I say, when you truly have your affection on things of heaven, the Lord God is talking about valuing what he values most, us valuing most what he values most. And believe me when I say, money is not what God values most. All right, when we come back, let's start to take our look at love and justice and the connection between the two.